It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why I'm starting the episode even though I didn't have an, and that's why I bit ready, because I just didn't want to wait around.
Okay, well, so, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You probably didn't have to explain that. You probably just could have skipped the bit.
That would have been weird.
All right.
No, and see, in this way, I managed to do the bit.
Oh, I guess you did in a way.
See?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That was...
That's okay.
That's
what we call practical effects.
Okay, I didn't understand why you were explaining to me why we weren't going to do the bit, but you were doing the bit.
And
that's
remember
genius.
Your card? Is this your card?
What? How did you get it in my shoe?
From 4 weeks ago that we set on fire?
Well,
that's what I want to be, like a close-up magician, but a long run one. So, like, I do magic that you close up and you can watch, but the trick takes like 6 weeks to finish. And you don't stay there the whole time.
Because you've got to sneak into my house and put the card in my shoe.
Every time they're like, well, that trick didn't work. I'm like, yeah, sorry. And then like a month and a half later, I'm just, it's 3 a.m. and I'm at the foot of their bed and I'm like, ta-da!
How did you get in here?
How did you know where I live?
Magic.
Magic. Oh, Doug Henning.
It's an illusion.
Alright, we should probably do, like, actually start. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast that, records in a meat locker. It's really cold in here. It wasn't supposed to get too cold. Like, I was going to leave the windows open tonight and then tomorrow in the day for the cats. And then close them tomorrow night, because it's supposed to get below freezing tomorrow night. I'm thinking as soon as we're done here, I may close them tonight, because it's pretty freaking cold.
There's no meat, however.
No.
No.
It's an empty meat locker. Well, it's a meat locker full of shit that shouldn't be in a meat locker. Including us. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 311.
Yeah.
Yes.
311. That's a thing. 411 was directory assistance. Somebody else stole 211 for something. I forget what.
Oh, I have no idea.
311. I thought 311 was something.
Like some police thing?
Maybe. No, but like if you dial it on the phone.
Oh, on the phone. Oh.
Yeah, like 411.
Time and temperature?
Maybe. It's whatever you're listening. You guys know the time and temperature. When you're listening. We don't know.
I don't know.
Figure that out. How would we possibly know that? It's, frankly, it's ridiculous and kind of insulting that you would ask us to tell you. So stop.
Yeah. What's the matter with you guys?
For those of you just joining us, here's how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them manifest physically within the hat itself. Estudiante?
Whatever that means.
Servant? I think it means student in Spanish, but I don't know. Maybe to study, I don't know. Servants, reach into the hat, draw those cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the show.
Mm-hmm. That's it?
When's the last time we did this?
Well, we pre-recorded something for my birthday that was a week
ago. So it's like a week and a half.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about La La Land, right?
Yep.
Really twice. Like La La Land. You guys should see it. It's probably going to win a lot of Oscars on Sunday.
I guess we'll find out.
Probably.
We finished Life is Strange. Have you ever played that?
No.
Do you even know what I'm talking about?
I thought it was a TV show until you
video
said...
Video game. excuse me, it's a video game.
Yeah. I think at some point I knew that, but that's as much as I know. Unfortunately, it's also a slogan for something I don't remember that really annoyed me. But, no, tell me about it.
Well, it originally was a game that was released in chapters.
Okay.
Five of them.
Yes.
We just got it all at once for $20 or something.
What is the genre of said game? Like an adventure game, point and click kind of deal, or...
I guess. I don't know.
Mobile battle arena?
No, it's...
Erotic light novel?
No, it's kind of like in the vein of Going Home and things like that, kind of.
Gone Home.
Yeah, Gone Home. Except, I mean, it's not in first person. I don't know. I don't know if it really fits in a genre, per se. I suppose...
Probably qualifies as adventure.
Probably, yeah.
You know, like Myst or things like that.
Kind of, I guess. I'm surprised you haven't heard of it, because I thought it was fairly famous, and, like, people were talking about it, and, like...
It's possible.
Felicia Day, broadcast her play sessions of it, and...
She and I haven't spoken in weeks.
But I'm just saying it seems to have a following or be very famous.
I feel like somebody at work may have talked to me about it once, but... Unfortunately, there's a whole goob of independent... games that caught on that I mix up the titles in my head because they all have weird titles, so I'm like, Life is Strange sounds familiar, or was I thinking of Stanley Parable, or was I thinking of Binding of Isaac, or was I thinking of The Beginner's Guide, and just a lot of ones that I'm like, it's an indie game that everybody's like, you should really play it, and it has kind of an awkward title, and that's as much as I remember. So I probably have heard of it, but it just probably got lost in the shuffle.
I have no idea why this game is so popular.
You did not particularly like it?
I didn't particularly like it or dislike it. It was a very blah game. I mean, I'm very glad we didn't spend more than $20 on it, because it was...
How did your wife feel?
The same, I think. It was fairly derivative, fairly predictable, fairly... A lot of people really liked it, and I just cannot for the life of me figure out why. I mean, I guess I can imagine it being something I would have heard of that some people liked, kind of deal.
Yeah.
But not like, when I hear people talk about it, they're really enthused about it. I'm sorry, enthusiastic about it. So it's like, well, why? I can't figure it out. I thought maybe we would get to a chapter that something really interesting would happen, or there'd be some big twist or something. But it was pretty, like I say, predictable, not really that interesting at all. And she ended it like a few days ago, and I can't figure...
Strange.
I just can't figure it out. And there were several things I didn't like about it, and specific things that I won't talk about because I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but for the most part, it was, like, fine. I don't think we waste our time playing it, but I cannot figure out why it was that popular.
Sometimes those games, if they just get the right amount of hype, become popular because chunks of gamer demographics that basically have never played a game like that before, even if there are a lot of them.
Oh, I see.
So if it is sort of an adventure game, those tend to be kind of niche. Most gamers don't play a lot of adventure games, but the people that do are really into them. So maybe this one somehow like broke through into mainstream, as it was. That can be a thing. Oh my goodness, we're having thunder boomies.
I don't know. I just can't figure it out. But that's one thing that happened. I also finished reading a 1928 three-volume novel called The Mummy, or A Tale from the 22nd Century. By when it was published anonymously, the woman's name was Jane Webb, but she got married, and so now people might know her, be able to look her up by the name Loudon, Jane Loudon. And it was an interesting read. I can tell why it's not a story that's
usually famous.
Yeah, that's yeah. remembered along with a lot of other great 19th
the
century
volumes
comics.
Don't help.
No. Well, but it's a quick read, though, in spite of that.
Apparently, Count of Monte Cristo is actually 3 volumes in, like, its unedited form, but you almost never find it in its unedited form.
It wasn't like, bad. I enjoyed reading it. It took a lot longer than it needed to. It was very strange because it was almost like this Jane Loudon must be like Ayn Rand must be Jane Loudon reincarnated or something. Because it was almost it almost seemed like this is almost objectivist or what else is the her
rationalist. Yeah.
It was almost like that. Almost like that. It's very weird. It's supposed to be set in the 22nd century. Well, okay, so I said the title is The Mummy, or, you know...
because that's how they did it back then. They'd say some short title or a paragraph or something.
But the story was remarkably bereft of any speculative fiction aspects.
So in the 22nd century, looking off a lot like 1928 or whatever?
It's peppered through. Real. Okay. Like, if you look up this story, you'll see people say, oh, and, you know, she, unlike Mary Shelley's The Last Man, because Mary Shelley also sets a story in the 22nd century, The Last Man, where some disease wipes out all these people. But, like, if you read it, because I've read part of it, there's nothing speculative. I don't even know why she sets it 200 years into the future. I don't understand. So, but
because if she sets it in the current time and has the disease wipe out most people, everyone will think
she did. She caused it.
They'll be like, she's plotting.
But 200 years is really
like,
200.
No, it's clearly not her.
But this author tries to put in a few things, and whenever you look the
flying cars
the book up. No, whenever you look at the book up, they'll say, oh, and she mentioned this and this and this and this. She did mention it's a list of about 10 things, but it's like.
In passing.
Yeah, like a little sentence here and there. I mean, you could
blah, 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 robot. Anyway.
Yeah, you could be totally forgiven of any, you know, you could read the whole thing and forget that it was supposed to be 200 years in the future. Because also, along with the fact that she only peppers in these things here and there, she talks about how over the 200 years after her time, a lot of this social upheaval happens, but eventually people come right back in England, in England to having a you know, dictatorial monarchy or whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
So the reason everything's the same isn't because it stayed the same for 200 years. It cycled back.
We got 80 some odd years left. It could still happen.
Well, but it was also pretty clear that, well, I don't know if it's clear. It seemed like
in the current political climate, it could totally happen.
It seemed like the author wanted, was trying to argue that this is the best form of government. An absolute monarchy is the best. And the people who think otherwise just don't know any better.
I think any time a speculative fiction invents a new society or a future society or something, they're either trying to demonstrate this is the best way to do it, or they're trying to demonstrate this is a horrible
way. Yeah, right, one of those.
Yeah.
So anyhow, so there's very little actual speculative fiction, and there's also not very much of The Mummy either.
What the hell is there?
Well, The Mummy is in there. Sometimes it seems like a satire, and a pretty funny one, too. When the mummy shows up, there's some pretty good gothic-style horror writing. It's pretty good, but it's not very often. There's some straight-up drama, but it's all, like, political, you know, political intrigue kind of stuff. And there's romance. And the romance is the worst, because I think she was 17 when she wrote it, and... Oftentimes with 19th century stuff, you can't always tell because the person's 17, 18 years old, that you don't really notice. But this is like, yeah, I could believe she was 17 when she wrote this because it's not good. I mean, to me, it's quite bad. So, but it was still interesting to read it. And she makes fun of everybody a little bit, but she makes fun of
even me.
She makes fun of people who aren't noble people the most. Because
we call those peasants.
Yeah, they're the stupid people that, like, one thing she's constantly making fun of is that, well, she overall she makes fun of progress, this notion of progress, and when she makes fun of noble people, it's It's not in the context of how, like, we might make fun of noble people being, you know, stupid rich people who are out of touch or whatever. It's fine that they're nobles. Nobles are good. Nobles are what you want running the country. Mm-hmm. But some of them are affected by progress in a way that makes them not quite as effective as they could be. They have a little bit too much compassion for the so-called downtrodden. But one thing she makes fun of a lot is, one aspect of progress she makes fun of a lot is, like, universal education. Okay. Because, and the way she makes fun of it is that all of the servants have these amazing vocabularies because of universal education, and so whenever they talk about something, they're constantly peppering their talk with all of these big words, and they're being very verbose and stuff all the time. The point being that you don't need universal education, because some people, they're just going to be servants. What do they need all of that education for? You know, that kind of thing. And so some of...
It's not making me want to read
that. I know, right? And that's... I tried to read
it. To be fair, as soon as you said three volumes, it was never happening.
Well,
now I'm like, nah.
The thing is, when I...
Now I don't even feel guilty about it.
I tried to read it once and noticed that it was kind of going that direction, and I stopped. This was a long time ago. But then I decided, no, I probably should give this a read for a variety of reasons that relate to other work I'm doing. So I sort of muscled through it. But it was interesting, though. I mean, it wasn't... I didn't torture myself to read it. It was interesting.
The work he's doing is trying to bring back the monarchy.
But I thought, anyway, it was just kind of interesting the way she presented things. And I'd read an article a long time ago about it, where someone was arguing that this story was sort of Jane Loudon's, Jane Webb at the time, reaction to Mary Shelley's stuff. Mm. Where in Frankenstein, which preceded this work, in Frankenstein, you know, if you're paying attention, you can pick up on some of the radical political themes of her father, William Godwin, and of her mother, who wrote feminist stuff. You can pick up on that stuff a little bit. And Jane Webb, young Jane Webb, was like sort of reacting against that. So she was going to write about a mummy, you know, revived by galvanism, you know, and all this stuff, and sort of tell sort of the opposite story, which in a way it is. It's very much... One is sort of an answer to the other.
And I can see that. The thing that I'm writing, I feel in a lot of ways, is trying to be a response to a lot of stuff that exists in modern narrative.
Yeah, yeah. And it was interesting for that. For being that, it was actually very interesting. But I was also kind of interested in the mummy character as an archetype. You know, it's a revenant character, but unlike like a vampire or a zombie, there's no consumption aspect to it. So you have to give.
And there's almost always a distinctive class aspect that doesn't necessarily exist in other.
Right. But you kind of have to provide that. It's like, okay, so the vampire has this built-in monstrous characteristic that you know that his supernatural aspects are going to be used for bad things. But this mummy's here, and that what about the mummy is, or should we feel threatened by or threatened about, aside from the fact that it's coming back from the dead, and if that's not enough to make you feel scared or whatever. And she didn't really, there wasn't anything like that. I mean, whenever the mummy was around...
Like, mummies to me are like King Kong. They're in the monster category of like, whatever, I don't care.
Well, and when the mummy was around people, they were afraid of him for some reason, maybe just because he looked odd, you know, because he's a reanimated mummy. But there was never anything said about him that would... So what does he want? You know, why is he talking to people? Why is he interacting with people? What's his thing?
That's problematic.
Yeah, it really is, because it takes the menace away. You can't just assume, like I said, that the vampire has something sort of built in. But the mummy, you have to introduce something. Like in the 1932, I think, film with Boris Karloff, he wanted to find his... You know, he was mummified without his vital organs taken out. He was mummified alive, so to speak, as a punishment because of an affair he was having with a woman. And when he came back, he wanted to find that woman. So you know what his motivations are. You know
that's actually how there was pretty much the motivation in the first Brendan Fraser one, too.
That's right. They basically based it on the Boris Karloff movie.
Yeah. Or the other version you can do is revenge.
Yeah, revenge.
Or protection of their valuables.
Yeah. And that kind of thing. That's the whole revenant angle.
Yeah.
But you've got to add that in. You can't just it's a corpse come back to life. Okay, that sounds creepy in a way, but
going to start a business.
But yeah, there's got to be some reason that you should be scared of this character, and it was never in the story ever, and you only learn of its motivations at the end, and they're not particularly. I mean, she tries to make you think they're nefarious throughout, but you're not shown that. You're just told that kind of. So you don't know really what's going on. And then at the end, when it's explained what's going on, there's nothing really scary about it at all.
Abolishing the estate tax.
But most, like 90% of the thing has no particular speculation, like scientific speculations, or no money.
Mummyism.
Yeah. Yep. So it's weird that it's titled that, because it's like that's the last thing she seems to be interested in as she's writing this story.
That's what gets the copies off the shelves. People are in it for the mummy.
But it was. I'm glad I read it. It was very interesting. But I don't know if I'd recommend it to anybody.
I'm bored by the description, so I'm definitely not.
But anyway, what did you do for the week last week?
Still playing more.
Dragon Age.
Dragon Age.
Are you?
I refuse to. Blackwall just pissed me off now, so I refuse to hook up with him. And I did look it up because I couldn't help myself. And I can't really have a romance with Scout Harding.
No, you can't.
You could have a variant of it, like one that wasn't, like it was an off-screen romance, sort of.
Yeah.
But I think I would have had to not do things I've already done.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So, by process of elimination, I think I'm going to try and go for Sarah.
Okay.
I think she and I have a thing. Well, and that's the thing. At this point, I mostly just take out Sarah and Cassandra and Dorian. And Dorian was a possibility, and then I found out he's gay.
Yeah.
So, that's no good. Yeah, so they're the ones that I've been...
Have you done his personal quest yet?
I haven't done any... I have not had personal quests arrive yet, at all. I've killed 3 dragons, though.
Okay.
So that's moving along. No, I still haven't saved the Empress. That's my next...
I should tell you, since you've settled on...
But I got about 60 hours into it now.
Since you've settled on Sarah... She has a particular attraction to Kanari.
Yes, I had read that too.
Yeah, she's like a lot of the things that she said to you, she doesn't say to any other character.
There have been a couple of times where she's talked about how hot I am.
Yeah, or well fit or whatever she says. She doesn't say that to anybody else.
We also, this last weekend, watched the 4th season of Sherlock. Which we had not done yet.
We've only watched 2 episodes, 2 90-minute episodes. We haven't seen the last one.
Okay. The last one's a tricky one. The last one's nuts. I have heard other people say the first 2 are okay and the 3rd one's terrible. I found the first one to be really bad. Especially the end, I thought was just awful. and not in a that I things didn't go the way I wanted, like things didn't make sense in the end. The second one with the little creepy dude who I thought was a really young Ronnie Corbett, and I looked him up and he's actually Dr. Zola from the Avengers and Captain America movies. The second one involves the short British guy with very bad teeth who's like really famous.
Right, but like he's in lots of things. He was in Truman Capote in one of those.
That makes sense.
Truman Capote movies. He was in Wayward Pines.
Never saw that.
Wasn't he in the Hunger Games movies in certain places?
Possibly. I only saw the first one of those.
Maybe he wasn't.
He's
been in lots of stuff.
That episode. That guy. Maybe one of my favorite Sherlock episodes ever.
It's good.
I really liked so much about that, especially because it was crazy and confusing, and by the end I felt satisfied with the answers. And usually you can't have both of those in a Sherlock episode.
Yeah.
Either it plays it pretty straight or it's nuts and by the end you're like, what? And that was weird.
I thought it was good.
The third one is weird. I will say this. The 4th season may be the last season. They have not decided. If it is, that works. Like, what happened at the end of this season works as a series finale.
Hmm. Okay.
So that's good. I have a lot of things to say about the last episode, but they're all spoilery. I'll just say I was conflicted about a lot of things in the last episode.
Okay.
Also, a thing I didn't put together until really recently. So, it's Stephen Moffat does it all, but he does it with Nick Gatiss.
The guy who plays...
That's the thing! He's the co-creator, he's a co-writer, he directs some of them, things like that, and he's Mycroft.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's Mycroft. I did not know that.
Yep.
That was weird. So we saw that. I've been watching some Riff Trax movies. Amazon has a bunch of Riff Trax movies now.
I don't know what that means.
Riff Trax is three of the guys from Mystery Science Theater. And in particular, it was the three on-air guys from the last seasons. The two robots and the guy. Those three voice actors, they do... I've talked about this before because I've gone to live shows at the theater about it. They essentially do a version of Mystery Science Theater now, but there's no outer story of a satellite and robots and shit. They just make fun of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do... rather than the Mystery Science Theater model, which is get a movie that costs virtually nothing to get the rights to, is they've done a lot of stuff where they just make an audio track. And so you go to their website and you buy the Riff Trax audio track for the movie Twilight. But then you have to get Twilight some other way, and then you just play it in sync.
Okay.
And that way they can get around copyright issues. But they've been more and more now doing some older ones where they actually will do the full movie, and a bunch of them just ended up on Amazon. And so I watched a couple of them, including Prisoners of the Lost Universe, starring the late, great Richard Hatch.
Oh, yeah.
Which was weird, but pretty funny. Just recently I've started... I realized that most of Archer is on Netflix. And so I'm behind by like 2.5 seasons. And so I started watching those again. So now I'm getting caught up on that. Still love that show. But I will say it's really weird to watch an episode of that show, stop, and then watch an episode of Bob's Burgers right afterward. It's very eerie. Oh my God. This is the thing. Legion. You watching Legion?
No.
Watch Legion.
I know you told me to, and I haven't watched it.
It's just, like, I don't even want to say because it's good. It's just fascinating.
Okay.
Yeah. So, we've now seen two episodes of that. Trish liked the second episode better than the first. I think I liked the second a little less than the first, but I'm still okay with it. That went well. I feel like there's more that... I told Trish to tell you about the baby shoes. So... for those of you just joining us, we have some baby shoes hanging from a lamppost in our front yard. If you want to know more, you'll have to go back and listen. I'm not going to tell you. I believe there's an episode called Posh Baby Fight Club. So listen to that one where it gets explained.
Because we talk about it even though you're not supposed to.
But anyway, we're coming home from work tonight. And I say, can we stop by Wendy's? See, Wendy's. So I can get something to eat, because we didn't really have any plans for dinner, and I know it was going to be recording, need to eat something. So she says, sure. Then we start talking, work stuff and things. We forget, and we totally come home and get in the driveway. And I'm like, wait, we got to go to Wendy's. So we back out, go down the street.
Yeah, Wendy's not very far from here.
No, Wendy's not very far from here. So we go back out to the intersection, and I didn't spot any of this. But apparently in Trish's mind, Trish is like, looks out on the street, and she's like, there's some baby shoes. We should grab them to add to the collection. But then she's like, wait, those are our baby shoes.
On the street?
In the middle of First Avenue. Like, what? Just out in the street, not by the curb. Like, some fucking junior high kid, I bet you, took them off of there and threw them out in the street. We were like, what the hell? So then we went to Wendy's, got my food, came back. Parked by the side, and I ran out in the middle of the street.
To get
the baby shoes, to put them back on the thing. And I'm like, the damn kid's just going to take them off again. God damn it. Hopefully, maybe they think it's haunted or some shit, or like we came back. Because I didn't do it. I'm like, what, am I going to hot glue them on here or something? Because I was pissed. But yeah, so somebody stole our baby shoes. but we got him back.
Wow.
I was like, how else do rich babies know where to come for Fight Club?
Yeah, well.
It's an important aspect of life. I feel like there was something else that I watched or did or something. Probably going to have to go protest next weekend. Not this coming one.
But anyway. Yeah?
So, Trump got rid of the federal advisory thing or whatever for not discriminating against transgender people.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It was not a law, but it was something where the White House officially was telling everybody not to do that Obama put into place. He has officially rescinded that.
Mm.
And somebody's doing another protest next weekend. So, I'm like, God damn it. Probably going to have to go.
Where's that going to be?
Ped Mall again. Ped Mall at 2 on either Saturday or Sunday. I don't remember. I'm like, damn it. Because I don't like going, but I need to go. So, the charity spreadsheet is almost ready. I think what we have settled on, as I think I've said before, there are 11 charities we have in mind. And so I think what we've now settled on is an equal, small amount that will go to each of them recurring every month.
Mm, okay.
Because it was just really hard to figure out because there were so many. Like I said, like since then I've thought of more and I'm like, oh my God, no. We've already got 11 that we're going to be doing this with. So we will see. But there's tons of stuff. Trevor Project's on there. Both Planned Parenthood nationally and Emma Goldman Clinic locally.
Mm-hmm.
4 or 5 legal defense funds. ACLU, of course. Yeah, I don't even remember what else.
Good.
But a bunch of those, so. I do feel a little bad that it's almost March and we still haven't managed to do it. But
that's all right. You want to do it a certain way,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong
well,
with that.
Well, and the way I've worked it out, it's not small change by any means, but I think we can work it into the budget so we can just do it indefinitely even if he's no longer president
sure,
and stuff
sure,
like that.
Sure.
I'm like, these are just good. We should keep doing it. DVIP is almost also in there. Not almost. Is also in there. I keep thinking I had something more interesting to talk about. Oh! I do have one. So as I believe I've discussed before, there's a persona I have at work known as Uncle Tony.
Okay.
It has shown up in other places in my life as well, but right now it's at work. And Uncle Tony sends out lists to a whole bunch of people, like a couple hundred people. And primarily, Uncle Tony sends these out as reminders when you need to submit your timesheet every 2 weeks. Occasionally, if I feel it's important enough, I send out other ones. This manifested off of a responsibility that I had when I started my first job, which technically I'm not even doing that job anymore, where it was my job to set up automated emails to go out to remind people about and it has morphed over time into me just writing whatever the fuck I want, and no one has ever authorized me to do it, but no one's told me to stop. So I've started getting creative with them over the years, and so I will write little bits of fake timesheet history, like the first timesheets that were just rocks and things like that. I will write ones about how everyone's famous timesheet-related icon, Timmy Timesheet, was actually based off of a real person, and I will explain that. I've done some weird sort of post-apocalyptic monologues about traveling the Badlands and looking for timesheets, and people don't even know what they are anymore. They're just worshipping them in villages and stuff. But I'm part of a special order that, you know, these kind of, I do all sorts of ones like that. And people like them a lot. Many people have suggested I need to compile them into some sort of coffee table book, things like that. Get a lot of positive feedback to the degree that it is harder now because I feel the pressure.
Sure, yeah.
And today, to the fact I didn't sleep well last night and I had a really busy day and not good busy, I didn't really have anything. But it was the day I had to send it out today. So instead, I said, Uncle Tony's tired. Doesn't really have a story today, so I'm going to give you a treat. If you promise to submit your timesheet on time, you can go to this link and watch a YouTube video of a short film I was once in that won an award at a local film festival.
Really?
Yep.
Oh my God.
Because last time I sent one, it started a conversation with some guy that resulted in me sending him the link that time. I don't remember why, but so it was just fresh in my head, and I was like, I'll do that. What's weird, zero response to this.
Oh, okay.
And what I think it is, I mean, maybe nobody is interested. I need to accept that possibility. But what I think it is I very openly on official email was saying, there's a link to a YouTube video. I said, it's 16 minutes long. It is, the content is totally safe for work. I'm going to leave it up to your conscience if you watch it here or send it home to watch it. And I think people, when you put that fine a point on it, people aren't necessarily willing to. And I did have at least one person actually who saw me, and we were talking about something else, and they said, I haven't watched that video. I sent it home, and I'll watch it. So I'm hoping that's it. Otherwise, it's like people just weren't that into it. I'm like, oh, that's sad.
Why did you tell this story?
We'll have to see.
I thought the interesting part was going to be, oh, people watched it and they had
That's for next week.
Okay.
I'll tell you, if you help me remember, I'll tell you the result. No, I just thought it was interesting that I just sent your film to everybody. Like a bunch of people. I'm just constantly amazed that I'm like, nobody's ever told me I'm allowed to do this. I just do it. Yeah, that's probably it. All right, we should hat some things. Tell me, when will you be mine? Quando. Speaking of which, there's a video out there. I'm not going to link to it. You have to go find it. Of a young man driving his father to a medical appointment. His father has Alzheimer's. And the entire video is them driving in the car, playing that song I was just singing on the radio, and they both just singing at the top of their lungs, just belting it out, and it's adorable.
Jazz wants to know. What sorts of things do you binge watch, and why?
Porn, I feel like it should be obvious. I have incredible stamina. It takes me years. Okay, I might have oversold that when I said years. I don't do a lot. You know what? One thing I've been binging lately. I don't remember if I talked about this before or not. It's not a new feature, but for some reason, my brain just finally woke up to the fact that I can pretty easily watch YouTube videos on my PlayStation 4.
Yeah, you were talking about that one.
Yeah, so that one really gets me. Like, I get sucked in, and I've been watching things for 2 hours. But other stuff, it doesn't happen a lot that I binge things these days. We used to, when we didn't have streaming, when, like, we would watch a series because we would be getting discs from the library, you know? Then you want to watch them as soon as you can to turn them back around.
Here's the thing about binge watching. As I've said on the podcast,
you have to then purge watch later.
Many, many times, is when I left home in 1987, I didn't have a television for years. Didn't watch anything. You know, occasionally, if I was visiting someone's house, I'd have something on, I'd watch it.
Remember that time you thought I already told you about an episode of The Simpsons?
Yeah. that was hilarious.
You told me about this, and I'm like, I can't have. I've never seen it before.
And I had to remember that I'd seen it at my brother's.
Your brother's. It took a while, because I was like, this is bugging the shit out of me.
What I realized recently was that my first reintroduction to watching television after, and this was after 20 years of not having a TV in the house, not watching regular TV, network TV, or whatever. The first,
the Hogan family post.
My first reintroduction to television was binge watching, because it was, someone talked me into watching the first 2 seasons of Lost.
Really?
Yeah.
Lost is when you got back into TV.
That's right. And but more specifically, binge watching it like right away, because when you think about it, I mean, a lot of people think of binge watching as a recent thing because of streaming, but you could binge watch with video, DVDs. DVDs. So
because DVDs made it easier to have a whole bunch of episodes of a like technically you could get TV series on VHS, but you didn't very often because but DVDs, you started being able to fit like whole seasons on a disc, and stuff. Right. So then it became a thing.
So after 20 years of not really watching TV except sporadically at people's houses, my reintroduction to television was binge watching, specifically Lost, for the first two seasons. Because I didn't watch... then after that, I watched the seasons as they aired first on the computer. Still not on television. I'd watch them the day after on ABC or whatever. We didn't start... Like, eventually... We called our cable company, and because we thought, you know what, let's just watch stuff as it airs. Let's try to do that. We called the cable company, and they said, you know, you're actually paying more by not having basic cable, but you have a cable modem or whatever.
Oh, the internet connection.
Yeah. If you'll actually save money if we just give you basic cable, and so you can get network channels. I said, oh, well, let's just do that. And so after that, we would watch... like Supernatural and the later seasons of Smallville we watched as they aired. But the first TV I watched after 20 years was binge watching, and it was Lost. And we liked it so much, we got other shows that we didn't like. We binge watched Carnival. And I would watch everything. I'd binge watch it if I could. Like, the only reason I watch anything as it airs is because I don't want spoilers. I don't want to hear people talking about it. And that wouldn't be a big... I don't go to a workplace or anything, so you'd think that wouldn't be an issue for me. It's kind of an issue for my wife. But the problem is a lot of the news that I read these days is entertainment news, and they'll put a spoiler right in a headline.
Yeah.
So...
AV Club is bad about...
Stuff like that.
AV Club... is conscious of it and doesn't think they're doing it, but they still do. Or the picture. There was one time Trish was so pissed off because she went to AV Club for something and they had the article for the finale of Project Runway, and the photo was very clearly the picture of a certain contestant winning.
Yeah.
In the photo, which means as soon as she got to the site, it was like right there.
So... To avoid spoilers, I watch stuff as it airs.
Speaking of which, I wonder who won the Mythbusters search last night. I don't know any of the people. I didn't watch any of it, so I'm not that curious.
I don't really like watching things as they air. First of all, I don't like commercials. Second of all, I have a hard time remembering week to week what's going on.
Yeah.
So binge watching works for me because I can, you know, I can remember it all. I would just binge watch everything. I would sooner binge watch a TV show than watch a movie or watch a TV show as it broadcasts.
Now you got me thinking. Maybe I should just stop watching current TV because I like to binge watch stuff that's complete.
Yeah.
Like, if I watch Bates Motel, I'll be binge watching it. But if I watch Bates Motel, I'm going to wait till it's done. It's getting close now.
This is the final season. Just started.
So that kind of thing. But here's the thing. I never get around to those because I'm watching current stuff.
Exactly.
And I'm like, so maybe I should stop watching current stuff. Well, and that's the other problem, is because I'll start watching stuff that A, turns out to be shit, or B, even if I think is really awesome, doesn't get more than a season.
Yeah.
And it's gone. So I'm like, maybe I should stop doing that. And then once stuff, bless you, goodness, once stuff... Like, we find out if it's good, and then I can binge it later, and I'll have time because I won't be watching current stuff. Oh, yeah. I haven't thought about that.
The first time we binge-watched a TV show, it was the greatest thing. Like, I've been in love with binge-watching TV shows ever since. I would rather do that than almost anything else, entertainment-wise.
Because we very seldom watch stuff that's like on streaming services, even though we have streaming services, because we're busy watching the stuff on our DVR.
But there are
exceptions. Like when we were watching CISO, when we were watching Bajillion Dollar Properties, which is getting two more seasons, I'm very excited about that. That was fun because you could totally do that. Like, oh, I'm on this high from watching this. Let's watch another one right now.
Yeah.
Or like the one that Trish does, we usually will watch, if we watch an episode of At Midnight, if it was a good one, we'll stop. Or if, like, it's time to go to bed or we're doing something else. If it was a shitty one, Trish is often like, we have to watch another one. I have to get the taste of that one out of my mouth.
Well, again, the only reason we don't just binge everything when it's finished, because that's what we would do, too. We'd wait clear till it's finished. We wouldn't, like, watch a season and then wait for it to come out, watch another season.
Yeah.
No, we'd just binge the whole thing. Is because of spoilers. That's the only reason. But, I mean, isn't that something that would prevent you just from putting it off until it's done?
Well, potentially, but now I live in a world where it doesn't come up too much, and I'm getting less bothered about spoilers.
Okay.
A little bit. I'm almost hesitant to say that because I don't want to give anyone permission to start spoiling shit for me. But I have just found, because in this modern world, I get some whether I like it or not sometimes, and I just feel like they don't bug me like they used to. Sometimes they do, but that's the other problem. Like, the one that bothered me the most recently was from Westworld, and it was not a spoiler. It was a fan theory that just, as soon as you heard it, was obviously correct.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't really a spoiler, and so, like, I don't know.
Well, I don't get that bent out of shape about spoilers, but I'd sooner not have them.
Well, it depends. There are some things where spoilers really matter and some where they don't.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, we keep up on these shows, and it's actually kind of work to do it.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's important enough to us to do that. But, I mean, like, you know, Supergirl is... It's... No, we like it.
Nobody likes it.
Well, that's not true.
That's not true. A lot of people like
it. It's... There's a lot of interesting social things going on with it right now, and it's kind of fun to be up on that. If we were waiting and watching it a year later, binge-watching it and seeing all this stuff, and then going online and finding out all this conversation that had happened a year before that we hadn't been in on, we would have felt like we missed out on something.
See, and I don't ever participate in those kind of conversations, so it doesn't matter to me. It's also the same because with video games, I don't have this problem. I play them 2-3 years later. Like, without fail, I don't ever play a current video game.
Yeah, and are you gonna wait for
Andromeda? That's my sticking point, because the one time I didn't wait before was Mass Effect 3.
Oh, okay.
And so I don't know. Part of it's gonna depend on how, now that we've got a date, how it lines up with where I am in other games. Like, if I finish Dragon Age right when it comes out, then maybe, if I'm still, I don't know. Like, I am wondering about that one.
We're definitely going to get it soon.
Did you hear? They put out a very small expansion, Mass Effect themed, for Cards Against Humanity.
No.
Yep. And apparently it mostly involves aliens fucking. To the degree that apparently the creators, when he was interviewed, said that, like, the staff was picking him, and he had to force them to pick some non-alien sex ones, because they just went for so many of those. And I was like, that's cool. I would never buy it, because I don't buy Cards Against Humanity, because I only play Cards Against Humanity in a group of people when we're all drunk, because otherwise I hate myself. I don't. That's the magic of that game. It is so vulgar and horrible in a way that it is a blast to play when I'm drunk, and I don't think I could play it when I was sober because I would be too ashamed. It's that kind of, like, I would be disgusted with the whole process if I was sober, I think. But it's hilarious when you're drunk.
Okay, I'll have to take your word for it.
But yeah, apparently there's a Mass Effect with like 12 cards or something that's going to go in there. But Powerless, did we talk about Powerless before? You should be watching Powerless.
I'm watching it, yeah.
Are you watching Powerless?
Sure.
What do you think?
It's fun. Alan Tudyk's a genius. I mean, I could watch him doing just
well,
anything.
Well, and you probably never seen him before, but we have been fans for years of Ron Funches. He's a stand-upper. Like, he's now getting into TV shows, but he's been a stand-up forever, and we have always loved him. I didn't realize he was from Atlantis.
He's pretty good.
And yeah, well, and Tudyk's really making it work. He's brilliant. He is totally capable of phoning in some things.
Yeah.
There have been things like that, and he's not doing that here. And he's playing a bigger role than I thought he was necessarily going to. And, you know, props to Vanessa Hudgens. Danny Pudi's great. There's not a lot to it. I don't even know that other actress, but she's awesome. I don't know what her name is. It's just a neat idea. Yeah. Because it's, I mean, it's The Office. Oh, but they're superheroes. Like,
the opening credits are brilliant. We laugh every single time.
Gorgeous, too.
Yeah, that looks good. Really,
it's, for those of you who haven't seen it, the opening credits is just like comic book, like old time comic, like action comic style comic book panels, but they're fake. They're redone, new ones like that. And it's got very exciting superhero music, and every time you just see a larger scene of a superhero lifting a car or something, and then it zooms in on one person in the background that's totally a cast member of the show that's an innocent bystander.
But the music changes a little bit then. It's not this big grand music.
And very clever. And it's totally in the style. Like, they look like somebody drew a picture of that person in the 60s.
You know? It's really good.
It's gorgeous.
The opening credits are outstanding.
And it's just a fun idea, and they're working with it really well.
Yeah, Vanessa does a good job. She's got good comic... I mean, she's a good comic actor. Right? Yeah.
Which...
Very impressive.
I got to admit, I haven't consumed a lot of her stuff before, but High School Musical and stupid shit like that. Like, I would not have expected that. I also wouldn't have recognized her.
Mm.
Now that she's gotten older, I think, like, I would not have recognized that's who she was.
Mm.
But yeah, she did a great... Everybody... Well, and Christina Kirk, who's his assistant.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I don't think I knew her before, but goddamn, I know her now.
She's funny. She's very hilarious. Funny. She's hilarious. But yeah, Alan Tudyk is excellent. I mean,
yeah, he does as Van Wayne, Bruce's cousin.
I mean, it's not. I wouldn't say it's like. I don't know if I'd say it's like 30 Rock or Community or anything like that. But it's funny.
It's like The Office. It's like The Office. It's
pretty funny
with an original take on it and more modernized. Honestly, if you go back and watch The American Office now, I know it's only been a few years, but you can tell it's been a few years. Mm. Is that a thing now that I'm getting older? Like, things can be dated from, like, 4 years ago. And that did not used to be a... I'm like, I can be like, that's so clearly the 2000s. Or even, that's so clearly the early 2010s. Like, that's a thing now.
I don't know.
That's weird.
I don't know.
You
ask me because I'm 8 years older than you. Mm. Like, I'm your canary.
Does it get better, Grandpa?
I'm the canary in the coal mine.
So there's a group.
If I die, you'll know you to turn back.
There is an advisory board at work, of which Trish and I are both part now. Even though our jobs are completely unrelated, we're both on this board. We both go to these meetings together, which there's only like 8-9 people in these meetings. I've been there for years because I'm their support person. I set up the teleconferencing, I take the notes, I put out the agendas. She is a representative from her area in this. But it's made for an interesting, because this has only been the case for like 6 months now, that she's now part of this. Mm. And so now they see a little bit of our dynamic in those meetings.
Mm.
And it came out the other day, because somebody hadn't seen me a while in there and was commenting on my new haircut. And I said, I did the thing, you know, I'm 40, so for my midlife crisis, I got my hair cut and I got my ears pierced. And this person, who I now assume is definitely older than 40, was like, what midlife crisis? You said you turned 40. And I was like, yeah, I'm an old person now. And they're like, giving me the death glare and all this. And I said, no, I like to say that because in my circle of friends, I skew young. Most of my friends are at least a little older than me. And so I love to talk about, you know, oh, now I'm 40, now I'm really old. And just then Trish walks in, and I said, speaking of old, and they couldn't quite cope. A couple of people snickered, but there were a few people who just for a second were like,
what is he doing?
And there was at least one person who this was their first time being there, and some people have to explain, they're married, this happens sometimes. We gotta move on from this, but that was fun. We don't really have enough time for... We're in that place where I don't think we have time for a question, but we're not really done, so... Is there anything you'd like to add to the establishment here?
No. I don't.
We're probably going to fucking have to get Stars now.
Stars?
They officially came out with the release date for American Gods.
And it's on Stars?
Yeah, Stars. Stars has had it the whole time.
Oh. Hmm.
And it's like late March or something, so we'll see. Maybe we'll get it as a channel on Amazon. because Amazon has a lot of those now, including ones for like Stars and HBO and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're talking about Bates Motel. The premiere of its final season was so good. Oh man,
my boss is also pushing it on really me. She good. Really likes it, but she thinks it the problematic bits might be too problematic for me. But I got it. Like I said before, your recommendation is enough that in terms of interest or concern about it, that's not a thing. Hmm. The only reason I won't watch it now is out of laziness.
Well, the first...
which is still a definite thing.
As I tell everybody, the first episode...
There's a rape scene.
Yeah, we almost stopped watching.
Apparently, there is also another rape scene at some point in the series.
I don't remember that, but...
Well, my boss thought there was.
I don't know. And there might be, but it's nothing like the first one.
No.
That kind of thing. It's. I mean, the first one was so
bad.
Well,
I told you I gave up Taboo for that.
Yeah. But
Taboo? Oh, my God.
If there is,
Taboo
I don't remember.
Taboo had a scene that was... like... I mean, you know, it was definitely non-consensual, and so I would definitely call it rape, but, like, it was one of those where she got saved from it happening at the last minute kind of thing, but the lead-up was just so psychologically tormented. I'm like, this is so much worse to me, because they were like, this is a thing I'm recently discovering in places. You're familiar with the concept of torture porn.
Yeah.
I am not a fan.
Yeah, I wouldn't be either.
And a lot of people are not, or whatever, but it's the thing. I'm discovering a genre that I'm choosing to call psychological torture porn. And I find I hate that as much, if not more.
Yeah, certainly.
Where you're just fucking with their heads and just causing them, like, mental anguish. And it's becoming a thing.
But isn't that, like, all the Saw movies and stuff? Isn't that
Saw movies is real torture porn. Saw movies is elaborate... I mean, I guess there is a psychological component because you're waiting for it to happen or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's about how it's gross. I'm talking about ones where, like, they don't do anything to you. There's not blood and stuff like that. Or if there is, it's minimal. They just play mind games with you in a way that just causes you mental anguish.
Yeah. Here's a good film we saw recently, Regression. It's pretty good.
Regression.
It's Ethan Hawke and Emma Watson's in it.
Ooh.
It's pretty good.
Hmm.
It's pretty good. You might like it.
I think this weekend we're going to go see John Wick 2. Because I really like John Wick.
I don't think anything's going to get us in the theater until Kong comes out.
I am not bothering with that.
Yeah, we're going to see that for sure.
I don't care about King Kong in general, but also that one, I'm like, it looks pretty. It doesn't look like a story I would give two shits about.
Well, we'll see. And maybe we'll feel that way too, but I think we would go to see it in the theater. Just about everything else we're waiting to see on video, and we're not interested in Wick at all, so.
I'm going to see Wick. Yeah, there was a bunch of Academy Awards stuff that I tell myself we're just going to wait till the small screen. The reality is, in a lot of cases, a lot of them may be too sad, even if they're really good, but we'll have to see. I feel like there's another TV show coming out soon that I need to see. But I don't remember. Alright, this is good enough. We should wrap it up.
Alright.
I love how the end of this episode is just literally killing time. So, sorry about that, people. That's how it worked.
We didn't mean
and
to commit chronicide.
And it's probably because I'm cold. Do you remember that from the Phantom Tollbooth?
Chronicidal Maniacs. What?
I never read the book, but I saw the movie of the Phantom Tollbooth.
Okay.
Are you familiar?
No, I don't think so.
It was a kid's book that then they turned into a animated film.
Okay.
Way back in the day. And it's another one of those kid goes to a weird fantasy land.
Okay, yep.
And very quickly, one of his first and most steadfast friends is the watchdog. And the watchdog is a dog with an actual watch.
Okay.
And I think he comes across him and asks what he's doing, and the kid says he's just killing time. And the dog freaks out. And it's like, it's bad enough when people are wasting time. You're killing it! So when you said chronicide, I was immediately thinking of a cartoon dog being just freaked out. Which is weird, because now you just laughed like Muttley from Wacky Racers. Yeah, that's creepy. If you'd like to talk about what dog William reminds you of, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. And also write the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And there's proof. See, people besides coffee do write in. I mean, it's jazz, so.
German Shepherd.
You remind yourself of a German Shepherd?
Yep.
And also like us on Facebook, I suppose. And tune in next week. You know what we're calling this episode, right?
No.
I want my mummy.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.